I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, episode 98, looking ahead to the Statesmen and the Red Storm of St. John's, renewing an old rivalry from back in the ECAC days. Saturday, 12 noon, Ridgefield, Connecticut High School on 89.5 WEOS. We're joined, as always, by the head coach of the Statesmen, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ted.
The 17-5 game at Dartmouth, to me, sort of crystallized this whole season in that everything in that game was even, except when Hobart shot the ball, it didn't go in. When the other team shot the ball, it did. Is that seems to be this year kind of in a nutshell. Am I being too simple here?
No, I think that's a great way to look at it, Ted. You know, this game in particular, you know, I think there are elements of what we've done offensively and, you know, from a scoring standpoint that have worked throughout the course of the season. You know, it's been a main focus of ours this week is making sure that, you know, I think the athlete these days tends to connect or hang on to more the mistakes or the negatives or the things they just impact you more emotionally. So, you know, we've forgotten that, you know, we've had good performances and that we've, you know, we've beat a couple pretty good teams and you know, how crazy, like you said last week, how crazy the landscape of Division I lacrosse has kind of really grown. And, you know, it's, you know, even looking like a Lemoyne win, you know, and then they go and they give Navy everything they have to handle a week later. There's just a lot of underlining themes here that our guys will let go of if we don't focus on them, you know. So if we look at the fact that we outground ball Dartmouth, that, you know, we're a couple of faceoffs better, and that, you know, we can't seem to get into that great groove offensively. And it in turn, you know, it looks as though this is a, you know, a blowout scenario. And that's what the score says. You know, the Bill Parcells of old, Ted, you're as good as your record shows, or as good as that score is on the scoreboard. That's the truth. But, you know, I believe that if a couple of these second quarter goals or scoring opportunities go in, you know, I think that's another great goalie who's, you know, saving the ball at close to 65%. He showed it. I think he had, you know, 19, 20 saves, something like that. And I think that was a huge difference in the game. And I can't tell you with the knowledge that I have over all these years, whether that's our shooting or his play, because we watch the film constantly, Ted. And I, you know, I know that question's coming, but I still think we have some pretty good shooters. They just haven't been shooting the ball great, man. They, you know, however you draw it up, our best shooters got to put the ball in the goal. I think we made that comment on Saturday when we're, you know, we're talking about guys on the sideline and this, or, you know, great take, great take, great take. And, you know, I maybe foolishly said, you know, this is in middle school. We can't have great takes. We got to put the ball in the net. Our best shooters with their hands free got to score. And we've set these plays up for them. We put them in positions where they can. And for some reason, you know, the last couple of games, even, you know, if we go back to Cornell, and the games since then, we just, you know, our best have their shooting percentage has been very underwhelming. So we're looking at more guys, more people, Ted, and making sure that we, you know, give everybody the benefit of the doubt to put the ball in the net. We've had a really, really, really positive and great week of practice. You know, I can't speak enough to who these men are when you're faced with some very good difficulty, and who my staff has been when faced with some difficulty. So our tone has changed a little bit. You know, I think in practice, our guys have felt that, and it's by design. But like you said, you know, you ask one question about the shooting and the saves, and we can start to dig at, you know, how we figure this thing out, where we've been, where we're going, what our thought process is, just in the fact that in every statistical category, I mean, we cleared the ball 100% against Dartmouth, and we faced off at right around 50%, and we outground balled them. That doesn't equal 17-5 if we can find the back of the net a little bit more and can make some smarter individual plays defensively to prevent a lot of, you know, I think Dartmouth's a pretty high-powered offense, Ted. They do a good job. You know, Firthy goes down in that first quarter for us defensively, and he's kind of the heartbeat out there. And so your plan for taking away their best dodging threat changes and this and that. So a lot of perfect storm stuff happened in a scenario, but I think if you look at the things that we're doing well and what we're capable of against a pretty good team, it's not all for naught. We got to flush that really bad stuff that we don't like and make sure we're capitalizing on what we're doing well, because there is some stuff out there that we are doing well.
You got a couple of guys right now that you really count on your offense that just aren't shooting it even close to well. And so here comes my question. Does it get into their head at a certain point? Would there be a value in just saying to a guy or two, I'm going to sit you down first quarter, just, you're still my guy. I still need you, but I'm going to give somebody else a shot.
Yeah, we're doing that. I think if we go back to when this first started, from meaning the shooting slump, you don't ever want to, be in a position where you're saying, "All right, let's move on." I mean, because no matter how you draw it up, these guys have got to find a way to step up. They've got to find a way to step forward, and we've got a lot of lacrosse left in order for them to do that. So, we are going to put some ownership into the work and working differently. There is some time where less is more. We have guys that, if we're talking specifically, Rosie and Deli, I mean, those guys shoot so often. And they're in the mindset of, if I'm in a hitting slump, I'm not putting my bat down. I am swinging my way out of it, finding a way to connect with the ball and just get some base hits, man. I don't need to hit home runs, but I got to get some base hits here. And that's where they've always been, and they still are. I think what happens there is you get some wear and tear on your body. These aren't young guys anymore. A Division I 4-year process means you're dealing with some ailments as a senior, and it's just not, your body isn't working or recovering the same. So we have asked them to take a little bit of a step back and, take a deep breath, start to remember the times and all the work they've already put in, and keep it simple and keep it pure. If you're thinking too much about how you're shooting and where you're shooting, Ted, I'm just a firm believer that it's not going to go where you want it to. But if you were to go see these guys throughout a Monday to Friday, it's weird. I told the Dartmouth head coach, who's a really good guy and doing an awesome job. Everybody knew he would. He's like, "What do you think about the season so far? We're kind of shooting back and forth." And I'm like, "I can tell you that, practice for us has been a liar. It's lying to us. We've got to figure out a way to practice differently, because we see these guys execute really well in practice." And we're like, "Okay, he's out of the slump, And so then we go into the game, and it's a lot of the same stuff. So we're gonna give opportunities for more people. We are. We just There's no reason not to at this point. And so but I do think that with more opportunities and a little bit of rest throughout a 60-minute game as well, Ted, not just throughout the week, it can help these guys probably, get the next play a little bit better, start to evaluate where that last shot went or how I played the ball the last time. We got to go trial by number here and get back to a system we're getting away from, a system that is being too heavily influenced by an opponent or what's happened in the past. We've got to make sure that we trust the work that's gone in so far.
What are the guys saying as a group or individually in the locker room? What do they feel about this season, and are they coming up with their own suggestions as where it's got to turn around?
Once again, they're very good guys. I think we got back Saturday night, and it was a very different message this Saturday than the Robert Morris one. The teams are very different. Robert Morris was we felt like a dramatic error in preparation and maturity from us. And I do think, since then, the elements of improvement that we've had to make, have been fairly exact, meaning, Robert Morris to Albany, we had to do a better job in transition defensively. We had to do a better job, making sure we're substituting properly. And I think, and then you go into an Albany game where three other guys had their career games against us, and then you go right into a Tuesday game, and then you go right into another Saturday game. And so a tough schedule, but by design, I think we have to be as calloused as possible in a week here, because we're getting on a flight and traveling, and that's the if we have as many experiences as we can on the road, it's only going to service us better. We only have two conference home games, so that's why we started playing away games towards the end of this non-conference season, so that we could get into that groove. But the way that they're we just has to we have to transform their emotion, meaning they can't be angry or desperate. Those are words that have obviously very negative connotations, and will put you in a bad playing space. You just that's not the way you got to play this game. It's a free-flowing game, and it's about trust in your ability, trust in your hands, trust in your footwork, all that stuff through the work you put in. So if we're reading into that book that's already been created in the past, that's how we structured it for them. If you read the book of the past, you're going to get angry, you're going to get ticked, you're going to try to, force a goal or force a stop rather than trusting the work you've done. But if we can start to write the book of the future and take all these experiences, both happy, sad, embarrassed, motivated, all this stuff, and really kind of drive that into that positive next step, then who knows what could happen, So I'm more interested in the fact that they have these conversations. So they've had team meetings after Saturday. They've spent a ton of time together. We're on spring break right now, so they've been able to take a little bit of a deep breath from class. We've had a ton more time to practice and film prep and just have conversations on the field to make sure that we're moving forward. So we've been pushing them really hard, and they've been responding really well. And we've also been, in between drills or during drills or this, stopping, talking, taking a little bit of a deep breath and saying, "This ain't life and death here, guys. Let's not act like it is. This is, we're playing a game. I know it means a ton to us, but if our perspective is in the right place, then we can still do a lot of good things this season, And so that's the way they're taking it. And I think they've proven to us, even though we don't see a ton or more that we've wanted in a maturity standpoint in game day, they're very mature. They're showing that they have great maturity in the bounce back. So we're proud of them. And just Ted, just anxious to get out there and play a solid game, man. I know that they're capable. We know that they're capable, and I think they're just itching for it.
I mean, you talked earlier about that second quarter, and that was as good a defensive quarter as I've seen any team play. You just couldn't break through. I mean, I was looking at the box score, the very first possession of the second quarter, you won the faceoff, you got six shots and came away empty.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could keep spinning our wheels here, man, but the two ends got to complement each other. That's how momentum's built. That's how you start buzzing a bit, where you're getting defensive stops and you're creating offensive opportunities. I think we've just got to continue to correct the individual in elements where we feel like we are doing good things, but here's the next step, right? And we can't make this a an after school special where it's like, "Hey guys, come on, we're really doing good stuff." That's not how we coach, and that's not how we want them to follow or play or lead themselves. So we are at a place where we feel like one end has played well in some spots, but the other end really hasn't figured out how to complement that play yet. And so we've got to reinvest in what this team system looks like. And again, we've got to play more people, and we've got to, give some guys some rest and give some guys some opportunities, and see if they can't capitalize on game day.
Defensively, I saw a couple of things in that game, and I think really throughout the year. One is the ability for the opponent to get the ball right to the front of the net and get really great shots. And the other is people coming out from behind the net. They either curl the pipe and get that dunk shot, or you lose the man on the other side and they pass across and get the easy goal. Where's the fix there?
Yeah, well, the fix is just in the detail. Your off-ball posture for some of our guys, although taught and reiterated, is neglected. You know, so we cover men off ball, but we don't cover them athletically. We're not in a position where we're, you know, with our butt to the ball side sideline, where we're low, our shoulders are below our opponent, and we're in a position where we're a step and a check and away, ready to support the ball, right? So early in the game with, you know, a very talented off ball team, and we've said, here's how your posture's got to be off ball. These are the things, if you're covering seven, you know, the ball's coming in there. You've got to be prepared to be on that left hand. You know, if you're covering 13, 16, you know, da da da. So when we get into these high pressure moments, we're kind of just playing. You know, we're if guys that open off ball and our defenseman's standing within 3 yards of him, he's not paying attention to detail and he's just playing. You know, and what we're watching film and saying and going, this ain't summer ball and this ain't a club program. You have to be great with off-ball posture against a great offense. If you're not, you're going to give up very easy goals. And so if you rewatch that film and the guys are catching the ball in front of the goal, we're in position to make plays. We're just not urgent. And, that's been a huge focus this week. Or if you're looking at the on-ball stuff, we're, you know, from a scouting report standpoint, we're not paying attention to who has the ball and what they're good at, where what hand they like to dodge with. And so when one combats the other, Ted, if you give up a few off-ball goals easy, and then now you're completely focused on the off-ball play and being, you know, glued to your opponent, then you're going to give up some topside goals or scoring opportunities from behind the net. So our guys have still not grasped how that balance works, how to be low and athletic, how to cover the ball and make it difficult for that person to create offense, and how to cover your man off ball while still supporting the ball. So again, another thing that I think we've allowed our opponent to distract is that here's the offenses they run and here's where they're good. Instead of going back to September basics and saying, no matter who we play, this is how you have to play off ball. This is how we teach it. And, you know, I think, again, the biggest distraction of the year, you know, different color jersey has not only impacted the coaching staff, but I think some of our players in that detail-oriented system that we push so hard.
Let's talk about a positive. Give us a couple of names, two or three guys that maybe have given you more than you expected from them this year or have improved more quickly than you might have hoped.
You know, from a first year standpoint, you know, we have this excellent defenseman, Ryan Melay, who's as athletic as they come and very aggressive, and he's tough, and it's just meat and potatoes, man. There's nothing to him except hate for his opponent. You know, he just shows it repeatedly. And he's been out. He's been battling some ailments, you know, basically since we left for the holiday break. And he's finally getting back into this groove, which we weren't sure was going to happen this year or not. And, you know, we had been flirting with, is this a year we want to give him back? Is this a this or is this a that? And then, you know, Tyler Cavo goes down and Michael Scarpetti goes down, and then you lose Firthy in that first quarter for a bit, and you know, so on and so forth. We're almost saying, all right, man, it's time to go. You know, we can't, if you make a couple mistakes out there, you make a couple mistakes, but we need your stick work, athleticism, and aggressive brain on the field. So we've really, you know, over the past 2 weeks, we've really loved the progress he's made, and he's done a really good job with all that stuff. And
He's a guy you notice right away when he steps on the field.
yeah, he's just in gloves. He's out. He's on the perimeter. He's comfortable in uncomfortable spots. And and we need more defenders to make offense uncomfortable, Ted. We're just not doing it. You know, I think from a cause turnover standpoint, our numbers are abysmal. We're so reactive to things. And we need more of the Camellas that are physical, the Miles that are physical, the Firthies, and we need them with shorter sticks. That's the problem. And so having that impact there has been great. And we just know he's going to keep getting better. That's the type of competitor he is. Daniel Cano is a guy that is scratching the surface, or at least showing just a little bit of what he can do. I mean, we've talked about him on this podcast before, but he's been learning the Division I game from the start of this thing. You know, there are film clip after film clip after film clip where we're like, Dan, this is high school, Dan. This will be fine at the Hun against, you know, Princeton Country Day School. That would work out really well there. But here, you've got to move better. You've got to find a gap. You've got to attack a pass. You got to, and I mean, he looks you right in the eye, man, and he's just like, "Yep, I got it," you know. And we always circle back with our guys, especially after we get after him a little bit. And you know, I got after him a little bit last week or the week before, I can't remember. And I was texting him, and he's like, "Coach, you don't need to, you know. I'm good. I'd prefer it, to be honest with you." And that guy, believe it or not, Ted, that guy's rare. Where you know, you can get after him, and he looks you in the eye, and he doesn't go, "Oh, wait. Does he not like me? You know, do my teammates think I'm weak?" You know, he doesn't think that way. He's just improvement, improvement, improvement. And I believe him to be an extraordinary lacrosse player. I think he's got phenomenal strength. He's got great speed. He's got great quickness, and he's got this unique ability to hide his hands when he shoots. So, we're asking him to step up for us, and don't really view him as a first year athlete, but the progress he's made, you know, with a couple of the you know, the Max Snellenbergs being out, and you know, what John Jude has to deal with from a day-to-day or game-to-game basis, we're asking him to do more, and he's really starting to catch on to that thing. So we've really liked his improvement. So two freshmen, Ted, that in a landscape of Division I athletics where you know, the freshman's getting drowned out by transfers. These two guys were asking him to play like upperclassmen. And you know, while they make mistakes and learn this thing, we're in a good place where we feel like when conference play does come, and after this weekend, they're going to be very experienced.
So let's look at Saturday's game, starting with the scheduling. Haven't played St. John's since the ECACD days back in 2009. So what brought this game back on the schedule, and why Ridgefield High School in Connecticut?
Kyle Turry first. He's my brother. I love that dude. I coached with him here for a while, and you know, my kids called him Uncle Kyle when he was here, and Aunt Courtney with his wife, and so you know, he's family to me, and you know, we again, I think the challenge of the A10 conference is how small it is, and the scheduling you need to do while conference play is going on. And the only relatable conference is really the Big East. And, you know, I think they're looking for games in these last couple weekends of March, and so are we. And so, you know, we've played Providence. We took a bye week and played Cuse. We've been scrambling to figure out these later March weekends, just because no one's really available. And so, we even talked way back when, Ted, about the A10 and the Big East having a relationship to make sure that everybody had a game in these 2 weeks and we didn't have to fight for them so hard. So those two things were kind of the main factors. And then the Ridgefield, Connecticut, we have two players coming in here from Ridgefield, two twins, Brandon and Dylan Penn, who are great lacrosse players at that high school. And you know, I've developed a relationship with their father, we share the same alma mater. He was a couple years in front of me, but we've gotten to know each other well. And you know, I think on one of I believe it was Dylan's recruiting visit, said, you know, we're looking for a neutral site because it's kind of potentially a 1 year deal with St. John's, and we've talked to New Canaan, they can't do it, and da da da. And he kind of cut me off and said, let me speak to the Ridgefield administration. And it's a great venue, great location. I think we're gonna have a great turnout of alums and fans from that nice tri-state area. And I think St. John's will probably do the same. So yeah, that's the long-winded way. Relationship with the staff, the relationships with the conference, and a place that we have some familiarity with, and we feel like we could travel well.
The Red Storm are 3-6, but number one, you're not taking anybody lightly these days. And number two, two of those are overtime losses. And number three, like you say, we're seeing all these crazy games where teams are hanging with other teams that you wouldn't think they'd be able to.
Well, yeah, Ted, I think we've proven that, on game day, we're not better than anybody. We have to earn it. I think, when I watch their films, I continuously say over and over again, I think it's a little bit of the turnover of coaching as well. And, some things that Kyle and I did together and what he's implemented in that St. John's program. But I mean, I see very similar, in an uncanny way, rosters and seasons, have we played a few better opponents? I mean, who knows? Yeah, I can't tell you that. Has their schedule been harder than we don't know. We play Bucknell, we get a good win against Bucknell, they lose to Holy Cross, and then they beat Colgate. Like, it's, how can we say one schedule, one scenario is different, better, harder, or we don't know, right? They play a Rutgers team. Rutgers pretty good. You can go on and on and on and on and on. We're looking at this thing as they have the same scenario that we do. They want to win, and they want some great momentum going into the Big East play. And I don't know as though I could phrase it differently. We want to win, and we want to go into the A-10 conference with some good momentum and feeling pretty good about things. Now, we both know that conference play is different. I think both teams could lose this game and they're going to approach their first conference game the same way. At the same time, we all want these certain things. I tell my kids all the time when they're like, I want, Dad, I want this, I want this. And I'm like, yeah, I want a private jet. We don't get what we want. We got to earn things. And so, the sacrifice you're going to make on game day for each other, I think is going to be at an all-time high. I think this is going to be, for lack of a more comforting term, I think this is going to be a bloodbath, man. I think it's going to be physical. I think it's going to be loud. And I think it's going to be two teams that if they can, who can find that balance between, like I said before, are you desperate for a win or are you kind of obsessed with it? Those are two very different things. And so, we want our guys to, take that word obsessed with a grain of salt. I mean, again, these aren't life and death scenarios. These are elements of opportunity, Ted, that we've chosen to be a part of. And that's something that all Division I athletes have to remember, and none of them do, is that I chose to be here. This is based on my decision making. No one's made me come do this. And this is a part of it. So are we going to pursue it in that positive fashion more than our opponent, or are they? And so, once again, you may not believe it. There's some angst in my voice. You know how I operate, Ted. I've wanted this season to go much differently than it has thus far. But I cannot wait for this opportunity. I can't wait to go there with this team, our team, another bus ride. I think, if all things go well, Henry Paul Raymond may be on this bus trip with us, which is going to be great for him to experience. And so it's, again, I'm viewing these things as like, all right, again, let's write the book for the future here. You keep reading the one from the past, you're going to rip the pages out and throw them in your fireplace. Like, we can do some different things here. These aren't finite emotions. And so I'm excited. And the way this practice week has gone has made me even more excited. So, we want to go do this thing with two very similar programs that are probably in the exact same place, in terms of how they feel.
All right, Saturday at Ridgefield Connecticut High School, 12 noon start, 89.5 WEOS, Hobart and St. John's. You've been listening to the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast. You can get this podcast anywhere you go to get podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, and of course, all your athletics information at hwsathletics.com. It's a delicate little machine, and we've seen some of the parts click and some of them not, and let's look forward to the day when they all click.
Yeah, man, it's coming.